Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of FYI with Daniel and Glenda. I'm your host, Daniel Scott.
And I'm your co-host, Glenda Walker.
And we are here today again to give you that knowledge that you need to help you start a successful business, or if you're already running a business, the tools to make your business greater. Today's episode, Glenda, is going to be really exciting because this is the something that everybody wants to know. It's all about the what?
The money. Right. But Daniel, before we get started with today's episode, we want to thank you for listening to all of our previous episodes and giving us a lot of feedback and criticism. And we just really appreciate you tuning in.
Yeah. And if you just happen to land on this this episode and you haven't gone back to listen to the other ones, just keep in mind that this is a series of episodes that lead up to what we would define as a good strategy for opening a business. So you want to follow all the episodes because each episode is filled with useful information that's going to help you become that business owner that you've always wanted to be.
Right. So this is episode
six.
So episode five was just discussing the business plan, you know, the importance of having a business plan, what things should be in a business plan. We also gave you some tools and resources there. So go back. If you haven't listened to episode five, please listen to episode five. And we also kind of get into the weeds of, is entrepreneurship right for you? You know, we just discussed a couple of things that entrepreneurs go through. So I really encourage you to go back and listen to episode five if you haven't yet.
And clearly, if you are listening to this episode and you listen to the last one, you've decided that entrepreneurship is right for you. So you're ready to move on to that next leap of faith. And that is the money. Where am I going to get the money to start this business? And I happen to be sitting next to the financial wizard, the master of banking, Miss Glenda Walker.
I like that. Financial wizard, master of banking. Thank you so much, Daniel. So this episode, as Daniel said, we're going to get into the money. Where is the money coming from to start your business? So you ready to get into it, Daniel?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
All right. So one of the biggest questions I get outside of what kind of business should I open, what should I do, is how do I get startup financing? So before we get into it, Daniel, I mean, you are a serial entrepreneur. You've opened several businesses. How have you funded your startups and your businesses in the past?
Well, you know, it was a struggle. When I started my first business, the tools of the internet were not all available. I mean, this internet information was just coming out. You know, we were still using AOL.
You couldn't Google everything back then.
Exactly. So, and I was always told, and until I met you, that there was no money for startups, that you had to beg, borrow, and steal to get the startup money, and your business had to be established before you were able to access any finances. So, you know, it was, I borrowed money. I borrowed money from family. I worked and saved. I worked another job. So while I was starting this business, I worked other jobs. Cause you know, I'm a big believer in multiple streams of revenue. I still do that now. That's actually how I did it. That's how I got started. I needed that money from those other jobs to support my living expenses. And then I borrowed money and did other things to try to get the business started and off the ground.
Wow. So how much would you say you initially started your businesses out with? Like, you know, just kind of like a round number.
Oh, no, I know the number. It was $70,000.
Okay, he knows that number. He will never forget
I will never forget it. I mean, you know, when it's your first business, you don't, I mean, you remember every detail, every struggle, every accomplishment, everything about it. So, yeah, I do remember. I remember having that $70,000 in the bank and then trying to figure out how to wisely spend it because I haven't had a customer base
yet. That is very important.
Yeah. So, and that's when I took the leap of quitting the full-time job and actually making the company full-time. And, you know, so that was a really big moment for me as far as for that. So, but yeah, I do remember. I can close my eyes and see that on my bank app.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So listen, guys, Daniel mentioned a couple of key things. Number one, he bootstrapped it himself. You know, he saved. He had outside employment. He borrowed from family and friends. So he basically bootstrapped it on his own. He didn't go for traditional bank financing.
And yes, I paid those people back, just in case you're wondering.
Yes, that is important. Even though it's not a bank, when you borrow, you should pay back.
I know. I mean, I know I would be asked. If I was listening to the podcast, I'd be like, yeah, I wonder if they got their money back.
Good, they did. And then the second thing that was really important that he mentioned is that he needed to know what to use the money for. So he had an amount, $70,000, and he was trying to figure out what to use it for. So that is really important, and that's going to be a good segue into, you know, startup funding. First, you need to determine how much money you need.
Yes, absolutely. And that was kind of the number because I projected with my business plan, I projected over the next 12 months that the business would be me and I was with the business partner. I had a business partner at that time, too. So it was going to be me and him 100% of the time. So, you know, there was no trying to figure out how to pay employees or anything like that because we were the business.
Right.
We sold our personalities and that's how we gained our customer base. But that was all in the projections and the tools that we needed.
Yes. And see, Daniel mentioned projections. In episode 5, part of the business plan is projections. So you are forecasting for the first 3 to 5 years how much money your business is going to make and how much expenses you're going to have. And that will give you a good indication of how much money you need. So if somebody says, okay, I want to open up, I keep using this same scenario and I'm going to use it throughout the series, a candle making business, okay? And so if they say, well, how much do you need? I guess $100,000. No, it's no, I guess $100,000. You need to know how much money you need to run that business for the first 6 to 12 months, all of your operating expenses, payroll, you know, supplies and inventory. You need to know that number, and that number needs to be pretty precise with a little buffer. I would say always with a 15 to 20% buffer you will need. So it should be no, oh, I guess, and just pick a number out the sky and say, okay, I need this money for my business. You should know what that looks like, and you know what that looks like from completing the business plan and completing the projections portion of your business plan.
Absolutely. And I will not, I know I've said this in previous episodes and I'm going to say this again because I cannot stress it enough. When you start your business or you're thinking about starting your business, you always have in your head that, oh, there's 7 million people in Atlanta and I'm offering this and I know I'm going to be better than all of my other competitors. I'm going to start making money really fast and easy. This is going to be simple. That's never the case. And I'm saying that because I made that decision. Like when I was first starting out, I thought, oh, this is a niche market and there's X amount of people who do X amount of things. And that's going to really, those are the people we're going to target. No, it never works out like that. I cannot stress that enough. Unless you're a celebrity or you're branded already and people already know you or trust you and they just buy from you because you're who you are. But when you're you know, at the bottom of the totem pole like I am and I was, you have to fight for those customers.
You have to build your customer base.
Absolutely.
You have to build your customer base.
So research your competition. Research them. I cannot stress enough. And you cannot over-research. Do as many as you can and be somewhere in the middle.
Even if you secret shop your competition.
Yeah.
That is key because you want to know what differentiates you from your competition. So yep. You might secret shop them or call them and get a quote and see what their service looks like. You may even, you know, buy a service or product, you know, a low-end one just to see what that looks like so you can know how you can stand out from your competitors.
Yeah, and I will also stress this to people because I know this is a mistake that I made in the beginning, is I looked at competition as people I didn't want to associate with. I said, they are my competition. They would take customers from me. I don't want to talk to them. And I made that mistake. And I don't make that mistake now because I will tell you this, in the technology industry, I know a lot of companies that are my competition and we are all friends. We collaborate.
Yes.
We talk.
Yes.
We share ideas. We share experiences because there's a lot of freak things that happen. And you just, if you ever run into this, you know, have you ever run into this?
And then also your competition also sends you business.
Yes.
I mean, I know other loan brokers that it's just some deals that I just won't take. I just don't have the energy or the bandwidth to work certain types of deals. And I'll call them and say, hey, I got this deal on the table. You know, is this something that you can work with? So your competition is think of your competition as a partner, unwritten business partner, because yeah. they can help you out as well.
And I will say, to circle it back around to the money, every business owner, or at least most of them, 90% of the business owners I've ever met and talked to are very proud of how they got started and how they've
yes.
established. And they love to share that story. So when you're going to ask, I mean, don't be afraid to ask questions. Like, I love when people ask me, like, how did you get started? Or, you know, what did you do to come up with the money and this and that? And, you know, what kind of customers do you target? I love sharing that. I'm not threatened by my competition because I know I'm good at what I do, and I know my customers, if they want to keep me around, they're going to keep me around. If they're going to hire somebody else, they're going to hire somebody else. It's just business. But from a funding and a financial standpoint, ask questions. Ask what struggles they go through in that industry and where, if they had to go back, what mistakes they made that they wouldn't make now.
Right. So great discussion. So the first thing, again, is determine how much funding you need. Okay, that's just start one. The second thing is, Daniel mentioned this, that he did. He funded his business with self-funding. Now, self-funding could come in a various number of ways. So I'm going to talk about some more popular ones these days. If you have a retirement or 401k plan, yes, you probably will get penalized and taxed, but do you believe enough in your dream and your business to take that money out of that account and start your business? I mean, a lot of business owners actually go to their 401k retirement plans. I think sometimes that should be your last resort, but it's definitely an option. It's money that you have. And yes, you're going to, again, pay taxes and penalties on it, but it's there for you. The second thing people do is they take out a home equity line of credit on their home. So if you are a homeowner and you have equity in your home, some people would just say, hey, I'm just going to borrow money against my home or refinance my house and take some cash out and use that towards my business. Okay, there's no right or wrong. That's fine. The third thing, which is being a little bit more creative and riskier, is credit cards. A lot of small businesses fund their businesses, their startup funds, with credit cards. There are some credit card companies are being very attractive with their offers these days, because I think in the last 3 years, credit card usage went down. People during the pandemic, of course, although it may seem like I got a box from Prime or two or three boxes every day from Prime, statistics do show that people weren't acquiring more debt, you know, while they were home for the pandemic. So credit card companies are actually having offers like 0% for 15 months. I mean, that is if you think about it, 0% for 15 months, you have a zero interest loan for 15 months.
Same as cash.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's just say, you know, you are employed now, you have your business plan together, you're about to start a business, and you have decent income and great credit. You apply for a couple of credit cards with those 0% offers. You get two or three credit cards that can equal $100,000 in available credit.
Right. And if you did a smart business plan, you'll know what you'll be like in 15 months.
Right. So and I have a lot of people that have invested in real estate using 0% interest credit cards, have started their businesses, because if you think about it, if you're a service-based business, you may just need a computer and some software. That may cost you 20 grand. If you got a 0% credit card for 15 months for $25,000 or $50,000, boom, there's your startup funding.
Absolutely.
Or if you needed product, you needed to buy materials or inventory, a lot of vendors take credit cards. So again, you're using that 0% interest credit card to fund your business. And you may need a couple to do that to get to your amount that you have dictated that you needed in the beginning. But here's the caveat. You have to be very smart about it. You don't want to end up with $100,000 in credit card debt in 15 months that you have not paid off. So as you start your business and you're using those 0% credit cards, do not just pay the interest only. You know, do not just pay the minimum payment. So as your business is making money, your goal should be to accelerate that and have it paid off on or before the 15 months. So what you would do is basically take, let's just say that $100,000 that you combined between three or four credit cards to fund your business, you will amortize that out over 15 months. And that would basically tell you what you need to pay towards the credit card bill every month so you're not caught after 15 months paying a buttload of interest. It definitely is a great way to be creative, but it can definitely bite you in the butt.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up credit cards because I take advantage of every credit card program. A prime example is right now with the business that I have, I put every single thing that I buy for my business on my American Express Plum card because I get 5% back if I pay the card off early every month, and which I do. So every purchase I make for the business, I'm already getting 5% back. And you say, well, 5% is not that much. To this point right now in this year, I've already saved $757.
Nice.
Just from January to May.
Nice.
Now, of course, my business is in a situation where we don't carry any debt over. And I understand everybody's situation is different, but utilize those things. And, you know, speaking of credit cards, it's really important from the very beginning to start establishing credit for your business.
Right. And a business credit card. And thank you for saying that, because that was going to be my next point. So I just mentioned personal credit card offers. You know, you're probably going to get the higher credit limits because you already have that credit established. You're going to get the higher limits. But you can get a business license or register on the Secretary of State today. Get your EIN today and tomorrow. Apply for a business credit card and get approved if you have a good credit. So you can use those offers as well. And the great thing about a business credit card is most of them, 95% of them, do not report in your personal credit. There are some that still do, like Discover reports in your personal
credit.
Capital
One does.
Capital One reports in your personal credit. And maybe one or the two. But, you know, the major ones, American Express, you know, Chase card, Bank of America business card, Truist business card, you know, PNC, just big bank, Citi, they don't typically report on your personal credit. So when you're applying, and I'm about to drop some free game here. So when you're applying for a business credit card as a new business, remember I talked about projected income? When they ask you what your annual income is, you're going to put that projected income in for your first year. And that will hopefully help get you a high enough credit limit where you can start putting your daily and your monthly operating expenses on that credit card.
Right. Absolutely.
And also, they have great 0% offers as well. They have 15-month business credit card offers with 0%. They have 6-month, 9-month. You may have to get, again, creative and use a combination of personal and business.
But we are going to go ahead and throw this out there. Just because it doesn't report on your personal credit, if you run up the credit and you don't pay it, it does get reported on your
credit. Correct.
Because you are personally guaranteeing it.
Correct. So you are personally guaranteeing it. And what that means, a personal guarantee, or you'll often hear a PG. You'll hear the term PG.
Look at her getting all banking
with If you hear, oh, you have to PG this, that means you're personally guaranteeing it. So you're saying bank or credit card company, if, or landlord, or leasing company, if the business doesn't make payment, I'm going to personally make payment and make this good. However, if that loan, credit card, or anything goes into default with you as a personal guarantee, then it will show up on your personal credit. Okay?
Yeah, and it's so important to build that credit from the beginning. I mean, honestly, and I will say this, more mistakes that I made, and I'm all about sharing with you the mistakes that I made in hopes that you don't make the same ones. But I did not understand that business and personal. I understood personal credit. I didn't understand business credit. And so for years, I relied heavily on my personal credit. And so I was getting denied things because my debt to income ratio, even though I wasn't really paying that, and it wasn't really something that I was personally responsible for. My business was, it on my credit report, it looked like I had a lot of debt.
Right.
Because it really belonged to my business. And so it took me several years to figure that out and to maneuver through that. Again, this is all before I met the genius that I'm sitting to next to. She taught me a lot of that stuff, you know, understanding it, making, you know, doing this, doing that, and separating the two. And that's why I'm really glad that we have a podcast like this now for people to really have that information available to them, because it was not available when I was
around. Right. I think we're in an information technology society.
Yes.
And information is just out there. Now, I do have some qualms about it because I always say sometimes too much information or being able to disseminate from what's truly accurate information versus, you know, some inaccuracies, you know, it's always a key. But the more and more you do your research, you can weed out the inconsistencies with information that you find online.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. And now let's talk about what are some ways that you can come up with money? Like, what are the different ways? I know you said when you go, so if I were to come to the bank and say, listen, I have a great idea. Listen, y'all.
He's jumping ahead. So he's getting into bank financing, which I'm going to get there. But I want to discuss one more thing before we get to bank financing.
Can y'all know this? See, I'm just all excited. When we talk about money, I just get goosebumps.
He just loves it.
I'm just giddy.
But I'm trying to do this in phases. So number one, you're going to determine how much you need. Number two, you're going to look at ways of funding it yourself, using your personal credit to take advantage of equity in your home, attractive credit card offers, 401k or retirement, family and friends, things like that. The third thing is investors.
Yes.
And this is something that I'm not that knowledgeable on, but Daniel is. Daniel has raised money for several businesses in the past with investors and crowdfunding and angel investors. So, Daniel, just kind of tell the audience a little bit about that.
Well, look, you can usually find angel investors groups online, usually through the Chamber of Commerce. There are a lot of groups that contact them or look for ways or good business plans to invest in. And then there are also online platforms like Kickstarter. Kickstarter is an opportunity for you to do an elevator pitch, tell people about your idea, and hopefully crowdfund how much ever money you need. Personally, I like the angel investor avenue a lot
better. Okay, so let's back up. So what's the difference between an angel investor and crowdfunding?
So crowdfunding is a lot of people that invest small amounts of money. So a lot of times what an entrepreneur will do is they will pitch their idea on a crowdfunding website like Kickstarter, and then they'll give you in return for your small investment like a T-shirt or something personal, or the first product when it comes out, you'll get a product. That's a lot of what Kickstarter does. And those crowdfunding sources do. You're getting something for the small investment, and it's usually small dollar amounts, not more than $1,000, $50. It really
ranges. With crowdfunding, just anybody or multiple people that are registered on this, you know, these particular crowdfunding websites can invest money in your business.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you go through when you initially put your offer up or your request up, you know, you're going to be vetted through Kickstarter. They're going to review your product idea or whatever. I mean, because you just can't post anything. It's kind of like almost like GoFundMe, you know.
Oh, like a GoFundMe for businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely. And as long as it's legit, and you know, because you are responsible for providing, even though it's small, and this is where a lot of companies get in trouble. They put up these Kickstarter ideas. They say you're going to get X amount of product or X prize or whatever for donating, and then they don't send it out. Let me tell you something. People who donate $25 and you promise them a T-shirt,
they want my T-shirt.
Yeah. I mean, and it's fair. I do too. I mean, you know, you would say, well, it's just a T-shirt. No, but, you know, they invested in your product. And it's not a good look when you put your product up there and you're asking for money and you're promising something and you fail to come through with it. Then it's like, well, what is the company going to do when they're actually full-blown and running? I mean,
right.
They can't even provide me a T-shirt.
Right. Okay. So that's crowdfunding. Crowdfunding, just think about it as a GoFundMe for your business, mm-hmm. where you're asking just strangers or strangers are willing to contribute to your business. And these monies do not have to be paid back.
No, it's you get something for that a lot of times. And you're reaching worldwide.
Right. So you do not have to pay this money back that people donate into your crowdfunding project. Now, angel investors.
Okay, so with my group, what we do is once a quarter, we review a bunch of business plans, and then we decide off the business plans which ones we want to invest in. And now investing in those business plans come two ways. You offer the business owner an opportunity to work with them side by side, or they can consult, or they can pay consulting. They can have an actual business owner who has years of experience in their industry. They could pay them a consulting fee with a minimum fee. Usually it's $125, $150 an hour for a minimum of 10 hours. And then that can continue on and on and on. Or you can give a percentage of your company to that investor, and then they will in turn do everything just for the percentage.
Which is equity. So usually when you are looking for investors, they'll say, well, how much equity are you willing to give up?
That's
so
right.
That's what Daniel means by that. So angel investors are basically a person or individual or even maybe a company that would invest in your business that is either going to operate on a consultant basis and or want some equity, want a percentage of your company.
Yes, and listen, and also monetize. They actually, you know, invest money as well to help you get going and stuff. But the thing about this is, and I want to stress, I can't stress this enough, as the opportunities I've been involved with several businesses, and they've given up ownership, and then when it came time, because in the contract you have an opportunity to buy out your business partner or your investor, and that's over projections. So your books are audited, and then whatever money that you're planning on making over a period of time, usually 3 years, is how much the investor wants. Because listen, they're having the biggest risk here because they're investing in you as a person. So, but I will tell you this: if you can, by all means, pay the consulting fees. Don't give up any
equity in
equity
your business
of your business
if you can help it.
Absolutely.
Because you give up control, people. Yep. You're giving up some form of control. And just think about Shark Tank. Shark Tank is where entrepreneurs, startups, and existing entrepreneurs go in there and they look for investors to invest in their business, but they are giving up equity. And sometimes you will hear deals like, oh, well, I will give you all the money you're asking for. I'll give you that $100,000 for 55% of your business. Well, if you give up 55% of your business, you're 45. You have no say. That investor has a majority say over you. So you have to think about that when giving equity. And I know those are just extreme examples, but they happen.
But no, listen, and you know, going back to what you were saying about the 55%, y'all, even 25%, I've seen so many business owners get in their head, okay, well, if I give up 25%, that gives me 75%, and I still have control. Trust me, you don't have control. You don't have control when you don't have the money to back up the power. And that's the problem. It's like your investor is only 25% owner, but if they're the ones with all the financial backing,
right,
and those contracts that we draw up are always in favor of the investor. They're not in favor of the business
owner.
But
like I always said, you always get things reviewed by an attorney. Always, all contracts, especially when it's investor driven. You know, I mean, it has to be two-sided, and I know the investor is expecting one thing and your side is getting the money, so that makes it two-sided. But it still needs to be protect you in some manner as well. So although they're heavily on the investor side, you still want to get an attorney to read over the contract and protect your interests and know what your risks are in that contract. To say if the attorney advises you and you say, okay, well, I can live with that, at least you know you were advised about the risk with that contract. So I, like I said, in the past, I use a legal service where I pay a monthly amount every month, and I just get, you know, an attorney, you know, so many contracts review per year, you know, and things like that. So I would definitely say take advantage of, you know, finding a membership-based attorney service.
Yeah, don't be distracted by shiny objects. I think a lot of people, especially in the music industry, I'm going to use that as an example. You know, when you are faced with an opportunity to live your dream, you are willing to make sacrifices that you normally would not make under any other conditions. And I think... Right. And I think that's the part that I cannot stress enough. Don't get distracted by shiny things, because, you know, you've got to think of this with a level head. And I know, you know, some opportunities, as great as they are, you still have to turn your back to, because they're not in your best interest.
Right. So keep your integrity, people. Keep your integrity. Okay. So determine how much funding you'll need. Fund your business yourself with, you know, home investments, things like that, credit cards, venture capitalists and investors, crowdfunding, and now the small business loan.
Oh, man, this is what I've been waiting
for. This is the big thing. Oh, now I'm going to say loans and grants because I hear this all the time. Glenda, I need to get a grant for my small business, my startup business, or I want to get a startup loan. Okay, so I'm here to tell you, traditionally, the SBA does not, and the SBA is the Small Business Administration, they do not offer grants to start businesses traditionally, okay? So all of those things that you're paying for online and books that you're paying for to tell you, oh, get startup funding for your business from the SBA, and it's not there. I'm just saying, every now and then they will put out special programs for different types of industries like agriculture. They actually do. Agriculture and energy. Those are two industries that they may give you some grant funding. Nonprofits, they may give you some grant funding for startups. But, you know, your typical brick and mortar, your typical services businesses, they just don't exist, people. So if you don't believe me, go to SBA.gov, call the SBA yourself. They're just basically going to tell you there's no grant money out there for traditional startup businesses.
Yeah, and I'm going to drop a website on you guys because it's very useful tool. And they, if there are any grants, it would be coming through them and you would get an email notification. But helloalice.com, HelloAlice.com, Hello Alice. Most of the time, you'll see in those grant opportunities that come through, you got to be an established business.
And usually, and they will sometimes open it up to new businesses with the pandemic, but those are usually corporate grants. Those are not usually government grants. So those are usually corporate or private agencies that want to, they have a special initiative and they want to kind of give money to fund businesses. They will offer it, but the majority of them, guys, I'm going to say 90% of those grants that are out there are for existing businesses at least 2 years old. You must have filed your business tax returns. You must have update financials before you can even apply for those grants because they're going to ask for all those paperwork.
Yeah, free money is just, it's non-existent. Even with grants, there comes strings. So, you know, you have to be careful with those because you have to account for all those dollars.
Correct.
You just can't get a grant and then do whatever you want. They want to know what you did with the money.
Get a grant and go buy a Lamborghini.
Right.
Okay, so that's grants. So now let's talk about small business startup loans. So, okay, this is another topic that is just not cut and dry. I will say a small business startup loan is the most difficult loan to do. But depending on your experience, what type of industry you're going to, and how much you need, and what you're using the money for will depend. So I'm just going to kind of put it out there. So when you go to a bank for a startup loan, although you say, yes, I want to get an SBA loan to start my business, you have to go to a bank that's an SBA lender, okay, first. So they have to participate in the SBA program because the SBA is not giving you the money per se. What the SBA is doing is telling the bank, okay, after you reviewed this business plan and projections and you like this particular candidate, if you grant them the loan, we'll guarantee a certain amount of that loan is paid back to you if the business defaults. So that's why it's called an SBA guaranteed loan. So just think of it like a FHA loan. So an FHA loan on your house is similar to an SBA guaranteed loan on the business. So on your house, if you get an FHA loan, you have a lower down payment requirement, okay? And if you default on that loan or the bank forecloses, the bank gets part of their money back because it's guaranteed by the FHA. So the SBA has a similar program on the business side. So the first thing is, once you have your business plan and your projections, once you determine how much money you need, you go into a bank and you say, hey, I'm interested in an SBA loan, you know, a startup loan. Now, most banks, the majority of the big banks that you see on every other corner are going to say, we don't do startup funding. Now, they participate in the SBA program, but they can pick and choose what type of funding they want to do for what type of businesses. So they normally will say, we don't do startup funding. So you're like, okay, y'all don't do startup funding. Or what they'll do is they'll say, okay, well, give me your business plan and give me your projections. And they'll kind of, you know, drag it, the process, for 2 to 3, 4 weeks. And they come back and say, oh, well, we don't do startup funding for these type of businesses. They don't do it in the beginning, y'all. Wells, Bank of America, Chase, those banks are just not doing too much startup financing.
Because it's high risk.
It's very high risk. And I hear a lot of this for restaurants. And restaurants is the number one industry with the highest failure rate. So they want to see certain type of businesses in certain industries be established for a certain amount of time because they want you to get through that statistical data to say that you can make it past the first 2 years. So it's up to the bank to determine whether they want to back your startup request.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds like it's really like complicated getting everything together. Are there companies out there who help you navigate through that loan process?
Well, yes, and RMSI, Relationship Management Solutions, Inc., can help you navigate through that process. But I want to give you guys some tools to think outside the box with looking for startup funding as far as a bank loan. So look at your small community banks. So these are banks that is just one in your city or one in your town. Something Savings Bank or something Community Bank. Those smaller banks have a higher risk tolerance. Community banks are not governed by the same restrictions and the same laws that true commercial banks are governed by. So they're able to take a little bit more risk. You may have a better option of going through a small one-town bank or two-location bank than going to a big bank. Also, there are organizations called CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institution. And CDFIs are nonprofit organizations that pick a certain area that they want to focus on. It can be small business, it can be housing, it can be any of those things, but a lot of them have a small business initiative. They are backed, they can do SBA financing, and they have again, different requirements that the bank look at that are more favorable to somebody starting a business versus what a big bank will look at. And if you Google CDFI in Atlanta, CDFI in New York, CDFI in Florida, a bunch of those organizations will come up and you just go to them. And you still have to have all those things ready. They're going to have their requirements, but you'll have a better outcome with trying to get startup finance and then go into a big bank.
Yeah, you know, I think with the mobile app now, I mean, with the mobile deposit and ATMs and things like that, we really don't need big banks, brick and mortar. I mean, I think, you know, back in the day, we needed to go in the bank for something, make a deposit. Or I don't think I've been inside a bank in years.
Yeah.
So as long as the smaller banks offer those conveniences, you really don't need to have your bank right there on the corner like you used to.
Well, you want to go to who's going to give you the money. So, you know, again, I would stay away from those larger banks with startup funding and go to the smaller banks or, like I mentioned, a CDFI or community-based organization that has an initiative to help small businesses start. I would start with those. And then you can hire a consultant. You can hire a loan consultant or a loan broker to kind of help you navigate that. And the great thing about hiring a consultant is the consultant will get paid in a couple of ways. They will get paid on a retainer basis for reviewing your business plan, for looking at your projections, for talking you through the process. And then they would shop that out to these community banks or CDFIs or companies that may have an appetite for startup funding. Now, I will say, and I mentioned this, I think, during the episode 5, when you're thinking about starting a business, you have to think about what can I be successful at and what do I have experience at? For example, if I am a hairstylist, okay, and I want to go start a real estate agency, how? You know, I'm not licensed. I never sold a home. I don't know anything about houses. You know, why does that make sense? How can I sell that to a bank to say that makes sense for me to be a hairstylist and I have no experience in the real estate industry.
Right. Yeah.
I know that's a far-fetched because you have to have licensing for that. You have to go through certain training and things like that. You have to make it make sense. Or I'm a hairstylist and now I'm going to start a IT company. Okay, I'm going to start an IT company, but I don't know about networking. I don't know anything about computer. I just know that you can make money all day, all night doing IT services because, you know, you make money while you sleep. But I have no experience doing that. You have to make it make sense. Okay, you have to make it make sense. You're going into an industry that you're familiar with. Either you worked for an IT company in the past as an employee, you learned the business in the industry, and now you want to go out and start your own IT firm. That makes sense. That is easy to sell to a banker.
Right. Yeah, and I can't stress enough how important it is to, I know people are like, consultants, what do I need a consultant for? You know, let me tell you, if you're not 100%, if you're like me and like getting paperwork together and presenting it to an organization like a bank or something, I want all of my T's crossed, all of my I's dotted. I want to go in there and represent my company to the best of my ability. And having a consultant do that or look that over, somebody who has years of experience doing it over and over and over again, it just makes you look better. You know, when you present to the bank what they're requesting and it's all organized and it's together and it's everything is attached to what it should be, it's more likely they're going to look at you as, somebody who could handle their business. But when you try to do it on your own, you're missing stuff. The bank's got to keep asking for things. You look uncoordinated. And it's like, well, how are they going to run a business? Wow. That's how I would look at it. I mean, and I'm just being honest. So, I know people are like, I don't want to pay a consultant. I want to pay a consultant. You know, you have to spend money to make money. And it's good to have those professionals on your side to help you navigate through this whole process so that you come out on the end better and bigger than
yes. So, you know, consider hiring a consultant or a broker to help you shop that, because they have access to these smaller banks, not just in your town, because there are smaller banks that are non-local that will still lend money to your startup business. But it has to make sense. The business plan needs to be very descriptive and tell the bank how you're going to make money and how you're going to pay them back, which is very important. But also, I mentioned this too before, the Small Business Development Center. The SBA has development centers all throughout the United States and metro cities. Those people there are former business owners that are now consultants that will give you information for free and sometimes give you names of banks that do have an appetite for startup businesses. So, because you just don't want to go to every bank in your town, these big banks that I mentioned, and they telling you no, no, no. It can be discouraging. Don't stop people. You know, if it's something you're really passionate about and believe in, you're not going to stop. But you have to be smart about your resources and use them. So the Small Business Development Center in your area, if you Google them, one will pop up for your area. You can meet with a consultant, show them your business plan. And if they think that you have everything kind of aligned and allotted, they will give you the names of these banks that do these startup loans.
Yeah, look at every no as an obstacle and every obstacle as an opportunity.
And if you get a no, ask why.
Absolutely.
Most people don't ask. You know, some bankers will just give you a general thing. We don't do startup funding. They didn't do it in the beginning, so they shouldn't have took your stuff, to be honest with you. But some will kind of give you a little bit more detail, like the projections were overrated, were off. Or, you know, this industry, we have a higher loss. You know, we have higher losses with this type of industry. So the good bankers will tell you. The good bankers. But I want to give you guys, before we wrap up, I want to give you guys an example of a startup loan that I'm working on. Again, this is a startup business. It's not with a big bank. It's not with a known bank. But this bank is taking a risk with this particular client. So I have a client that is a nurse midwife. She's been a nurse midwife for over 30 years. So in the industry for over 30 years, a professional service, she is opening a birthing center, a nurse midwife birthing center. She has previous management experience in some of the centers that she worked at previously. So she has ran the front office. She has ran the billing. She knows how to bill insurance companies and things like that. So again, she has the practical experience or the experience in her particular field. She has management experience. She's managed 14 to 15 other nurses before. And she has a great business plan and great idea. This is over a $3 million loan that a bank said, yes, we want to do this. Awesome. So when I say make it make sense, make that make sense. Nurse, 30-something years, nurse midwife, 30-something years of experience. She's solving a problem, you know, with giving alternatives to hospitals with birthing, which that's really big. She has management experience. Although she hasn't ran her own business before, she has helped run some of the clinics that she's worked at in the past. And she had a stellar business plan.
Boom.
Boom.
That's it. That's how you do it. I don't know nothing about birthing no babies, Miss Charlotte. I had to throw that in there. I'm sorry. It was sitting on me.
So, guys, this was a lot of information. Honestly, I probably can talk about the pros and cons of each thing for 5 hours. But, you know, I just want to just give you guys just a gist of what you need to, how you need to be open to and creative with getting financing for your business. Because again, startup loans are hard, but so you need to have a plan B. You need to have a plan C. You need to have contingencies. You need to be open and creative, because if you don't believe enough about your business to fund it on your own and get into it, why should somebody else believe in invest in it or give you a loan on it?
That's right. Yeah, you got to believe in yourself first.
And one other thing I want to say regarding the loans, a bank is not going to give you 100% financing. A bank, a CDFI, a community bank, they're not going to do 100% financing. The great thing about the SBA is that they allow lower down payments. So the SBA may say you only have to put 10 or 15% down versus conventional financing. They may say we want 20 or 25%. Wow. So you have to have some skin in the game, okay? Don't expect 100% of the bank to give you 100% of the money. That's not going to happen. You have to show that, yes, I believe in my project too, so I'm able to put some money in. So if you're asking for $100,000, you need to have $15,000 available. And another great thing about an SBA loan is that they allow gift money. Just like on the FHA side, when you're buying a house, you can get gift money. The SBA will allow a family or a friend to gift you that down payment that you need towards that project. Okay? So just remember, everything has to be documented, fully documented. So whatever you tell the government, it has to be backed up. Whatever you tell the bank, it has to be backed up with documentation that's going to be verified.
Yeah, please, Lord, don't y'all be going to jail.
Yes,
we ain't got
please,
no bail money.
Please. We want you to get that business funding, start your business, be successful, and maybe in 10 years sell it for millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Amen. Amen.
All righty. So, guys, this episode, we're coming to an end. I'm going to let Daniel do what he does best.
Oh, my gosh. I hope we dropped a whole lot of good stuff for you. Just keep listening. More good stuff is to come. We've got a template laid out to really give you all of the information that you need. And we are excited just as much as you are about learning and getting this all down. Please, as always, make sure you like, follow, and share our podcast. You can find us on all the major platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and our own webpage, www.danielandglenda.com. It's at Daniel and Glenda on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those as well. Please encourage you to share this out. Like, if you know a friend who's wanting to start a business, or you hear somebody talking, say, hey, you should listen to FYI with Daniel and Glenda.
Yes, please like, share, follow, subscribe. Please just let your friends and family know about this podcast and the information that you give. From what you guys have told us, you love it. So I'm sure your friends and family would love it too. And I mentioned, you know, if you want a consultation or you want to book some time with me, you can go to my website, www.relationshipmsolutions.com. And, you know, I would love to hear about your ideas. I would love to give you guidance and support on how you can move forward with your business dreams.
And if you want to contact me, you can just hit us up on our DMs because I don't give out any information. but no, really, I encourage you, if you have a question or you're interested in hiring a business consultant, I'm always welcome to hear some opportunities come up. But hey, this podcast is a business venture for Glenda and I. It is a new venture for us. We just started it. So like you, many of you small business owners that are trying to get established and going, we're trying to get this established and going. So instead of your money, we're asking you for your shares and your likes
and support.
Your support. Absolutely. So don't forget, like us, share us, and subscribe. Have a good night, and we'll see you on the next pod, or we'll hear you on the next podcast.
All right. Good night.
Good night.